Hello from the Grand Life. It's good to hear from you and to know that many of you are listening and enjoying our podcast. I'm Emily Morgan, and in this episode, we are continuing our conversation about surrogate grandparenting. In episode 2, I talked to a couple who have taken on the sometimes daunting, always rewarding task of loving someone else's grandchildren. And in that loving, they have created a true family of their own making. And that's been lovely to hear about. This episode takes an interesting twist, which is inspired by an 1830s experience called Connor Prairie here in Indiana. Did you ever wonder what it might be like for the employees and volunteers at a living history museum to take on the roles of the people who might have lived there at the time? During the 1990s, Connor Prairie was filled with first-person interpreters who did just that, and our children were some of those people who lived and worked in 1836 as if they had parents and grandparents who were really theirs, at least for several hours a day. In this half hour, we'll talk to one of the most dedicated Connor Prairie interpreters on the grounds, Betsy Gerard. If you were lucky enough to have met her as Kate, or Betsy Birdwhistle, or Aunt Elizabeth, you might have been transported back to that time, and you might just have believed she could be your grandmother, too. Next, we'll hear from our daughter Ellen and her experience as a young person volunteering at Connor Prairie. And for more information about how to become a youth volunteer or even an adult one who might want to serve as a surrogate grandparent to others, we'll talk to Sarah Morin, head of Youth Volunteer Services at Connor Prairie. While things have changed, and the volunteers no longer speak as particular characters, they're still in costume, teaching visitors about life on the Midwestern prairie in the 1830s. And lastly, we'll hear from another of our daughters, Grace, who found Connor Prairie to be a place of loving and learning. But first, Betsy, no stranger to communal living on the prairie, is now living in her own charming apartment alongside many other people her age. When I went to visit her, she was as kind and friendly as ever.
Betsy, you've got some company.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
When did you start working at Connor Prairie?
I was there 42 years.
Do you remember how old you were when you retired? We'll do some math.
86.
You're 86? And how old are you? And may I ask?
Sure you may. 98.
No.
I'm leaning on 100.
No, you're not.
Yes, I are.
Oh, my gosh. I would have taken you for 93.
Oh, thanks. I went to Connor Prairie to volunteer. It was all volunteer when I went.
Yeah.
There was 12 of us. And what they did was, if a school called and wanted to come out, then they'd call one of us 12. And we'd pick them up at the visitor center and take them around the whole place. Prairie Town wasn't there.
Oh, so were you acting the part at that point, pretending
no,
to be someone?
No, it was not first
it was just
person.
Like a,
I just took them
docent.
Around and described. I talked about William Connor, talked about whatever. I talked about what I was supposed to. We had a stack of paper about that high, maybe, that was our only learning.
Then it changed, because at some point at Connor Prairie, the people were dressed up and they were pretending to be the characters.
That's right. It was a first-person role-playing. I loved Connor Prairie. I loved the people I worked with, and I met people from all over the world.
When you started becoming a character, you were assigned a character. Is that correct?
Yes. Somebody scheduled, and we were put wherever they decided or their people were needed.
And were you always the same character?
No. I could work any building at one time.
Wow. And you had a handful of characters that you might be.
Yeah, one of them was Kate,
yes.
this lady.
That Kate was, with the pipe.
She was my favorite character to do.
And that picture above you is a picture of Kate with her pipe in her mouth and her hat. And is that Tasha Tudor?
Yes.
Did she draw
yes.
that for you?
Connor Prairie paid her to come and do her, as she called, ramblings. But she would sketch the whole time.
Yeah.
And then wherever she was giving the talk, they would auction off the sketches.
It says my good friend.
Well,
Kate.
I introduced her. She called me up before she came and said, would you introduce me? I said, of course, I'd be honored to. And I said, do you want me to be the doctor's Aunt Elizabeth? I assumed she'd want me to dress fancy, you know.
Fancy, yeah.
She said, no, I want you to be Kate.
Yeah. Yeah, the picture reminds me a little bit of...
Minnie Pearl.
Minnie Pearl.
Yeah.
I think Minnie Pearl might have been a modern day Kate.
Well, this Kate was a woodsy. She couldn't read or write or cipher. But she knew everything, and she had a whole bunch of children.
So Kate was your favorite character, and who were your other ones? You said Elizabeth?
I liked being Doctor's Aunt Elizabeth from Lexington, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
Money, a lot of money. Her husband had been a lawyer, but he's deceased. And she traveled from Lexington all by herself, which was really a lady should not travel alone.
Back then, yes. Yeah. So she was an independent sort. Yeah.
And I loved being Betsy Birdwhistle.
Oh, yes, I remember Betsy.
Betsy had 10 children,
yeah. You
know, and her husband left her. She was an abandoned woman, but she said she was a Methodist. She liked to sing, and she got along just fine. If he didn't want her, she didn't want him. I enjoyed all of them. I really did, all the characters.
We have 4 children, all of whom were involved at Conner Prairie. Ellen and Grace were the most affected by being in Conner Prairie. And my feeling about that was that they had very acute imaginations. So when they would go there, they would feel like they actually were living in the 1830s.
Oh, I did too.
You did?
Yes, yeah.
I think you kind of have to, in order to enjoy it, you have to kind of let yourself actually be those people. And so they came in as if they were in a theater, and they were playing a part that became real to them.
We did. It was role playing, yes.
Absolutely. One of the things that they took away, and I asked them about this just not too long ago, was because their grandparents lived far away, and they had good relationships with their grandparents, they felt very much like many of the people at Conner Prairie were their grandparents.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that funny?
That's great. That's just great. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of the things that a grandmother, grandfather bring to relationship, those were the things that they observed and benefited from.
Great. I did not know that.
Yeah. There are some wonderful things you can bring to a relationship when you're older.
Oh, I think so, too.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that some people don't even like to be around older people. You know, we don't know anything. But think of the life experiences somebody my age has had. Not that I remember them all, but they're here in me.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do grandparents bring to grandchildren? Love would be, I guess, the first thing I'd say. I love children.
They can just be who they are.
Yes.
And you love them.
Uh-huh, I sure do.
And I think our children were nurtured in a way that was like a surrogate grandparent who basically was there for them when they needed that.
Yeah, if Mom won't let you go with Grandma.
Well, I couldn't exactly get them up to New Hampshire on a regular basis,
no,
so I would take them to Conner Prairie. And they could run, and they could enjoy nature, and enjoy your presence, or Ron's presence, or Tim's presence, and enjoy Gretchen. These were people who all had a big influence on our kids, especially Grace and Ellen. It was lovely. It was really lovely. It was such a nice break for me.
Oh, you little Dickens.
In today's The Stretch It Takes, we hear a story from our oldest daughter, Ellen, who was both a youth volunteer and an adult interpreter at Conner Prairie. Like Betsy, her job there was not to interpret different languages, but to interpret a different time period for the visitors to the museum. Time is interesting, isn't it? It's a scarce commodity, and it's expendable, but also, in my opinion, expandable. You can get more from one measure of time than its face value But that requires work, flexibility, and a certain amount of stretching. In this essay, we learn how a child can enter the 1830s and develop a new, expanded surrogate family. Thank goodness for people like Betsy, who invested their time in these youth volunteers. Because after all, what good is a commodity like time unless we spend it on others? So let's go to the mat and take time to flex.
Lots of kids have their go-to hangout spots: the mall, the movie theater, a friend's house. I spent a significant chunk of my childhood and adolescence in another time period. From the spring after I turned 10 until the summer before my junior year of college, I was a volunteer and, when I was old enough, an employee at Connor Prairie Living History Museum, a Smithsonian-affiliated museum along the lines of historic Williamsburg in Virginia. At Connor Prairie, we introduced visitors to pioneer life in Indiana by immersing them in a recreation of an 1836 village, complete with farm animals, working blacksmith and carpentry shops, hearth cooking, kitchen gardens, and an entire population of villagers playing a host of fictional 19th century characters. As a historic interpreter, as the job was called, I memorized the storylines of multiple characters and learned the talking points of multiple historic buildings. The character I played varied depending on the building to which I was posted each day. Every morning before heading out to my post, I would scan the schedule to see which adults I would be working with that day. "Please, oh please, oh please let it be Betsy," I'd whisper under my breath, or Bill, or Ron, or Gretchen, or Tim, or Kathy, or Dwight. The list went on. Luckily for me, I loved working with so many of the adults that chances were I'd skip away from the schedule board happily, wrap a shawl around my shoulders, or pull a sunbonnet over my cotton day cap, and head out to connect with my family for the day. We all played such a variety of characters that it was hard to keep up with who everyone was. Sometimes I was Elizabeth, sweet and timid, hard worker. Sometimes I was Katie, scrappy and sassy, looking for trouble. Sometimes I had a mother or a father in town, sometimes just an older sister, sometimes a grandparent. The roles shifted daily, but regardless of who I was playing in relation to who the adults I loved were playing, we all spent our day doing the same thing, telling stories, together, creating a narrative portal to history through which we could pull our visitors and each other. Looking back on these experiences now, I recognize the irony in the fact that I felt so close to people with whom the majority of my conversations were pure fiction. Trips, experiences, and major life events, births, deaths, marriages, that never happened. It goes to show that there is a truth underneath the truth that, perhaps, matters more. I only knew bits and pieces of their real lives, and they knew bits and pieces of mine. But I knew their characters' stories intimately. The origins of the deep-seated feud between Dr. Campbell and Mr. Fenton. The outcome of the Zimmerman boys' last hog drive to Cincinnati. The reason Mrs. Curtis insisted on painting a black and white checkered pattern on her parlor floor. These were the stories I heard over and over, stories I learned to tell myself or to model my own stories after. And in the case of my very favorite adults, they were stories I was invited into. "Elizabeth here, she has her eye on this blue flower print I just got into the store," Ron would say to a visitor, wrapping his arm around my shoulder. Or, "Katie, she knows this song, she'll sing it with me," Betsy would say, patting my knee with her wrinkled hand. In the context of our actual families, children don't necessarily have much agency in crafting the story the family tells. We are born into a role, and we're known by our relatives in that role, often even before we have a chance to know ourselves. I was Ellen, the oldest, the reader, the helpful and reliable one. At Connor Prairie, I took on and shed new roles every day. Not only that, I was invited to be an active participant, an essential part of the narrative the adults were telling. They made me feel like my contribution was vital to the success of our shared purpose and that I was trustworthy, capable, valuable. Traditionally, the relationship between grandparents and grandchildren is based on shared DNA, not a shared work goal. But are the two really all that different? Grandparents, especially those who don't see their grandchildren on a daily basis, have the opportunity to see and celebrate their grandchildren for the ever-evolving people that they are. As a child, there's a real freedom to not being pinned down to just one narrative. And as the originators of the family narrative, grandparents also have the opportunity to invite grandchildren into the telling and sharing and making of the next chapters. This past December, I received a Facebook message from Ron, one of my surrogate grandparents from the prairie. It was a picture of a Christmas ornament with a child's painstakingly neat handwriting on the back, "To Ron, with love from Ellen." "On our tree this Christmas again," Ron wrote. Looking at the picture of that ornament floods me with memories of making it for him, of chilly spring mornings and sweltering summer afternoons spent on the prairie together, stoking fires or sweeping out cabins, of good morning hugs and see you tomorrow goodbyes. More importantly, it reminds me that the reason why Ron and so many of the other adults I worked closely with were such an important part of my narrative was because they allowed me to become an important part of theirs. It's a gift no amount of handmade ornaments can ever repay, and one for which I will be forever grateful.
To understand the inner workings of the Youth Volunteer Program at Conner Prairie, I sat down with
Sarah E. Morin, and I am Youth Experience Manager at Conner Prairie.
She explained that there was not a start date when the Youth Volunteer Program began because it started about 50 years ago as an informal program of employees' kids. Even the formal beginning is still not set in stone.
Because it started so informally, there's not a lot of formal records. I think it's 80s, 90s for the interview process.
What do you do in order to apply to be a youth volunteer?
How they do it now is they do have a formal application that they fill out. It includes some essays. They write down their skills. That's due this year on January 6, 2020. From that, we spend a couple weeks grading those, invite the best applicants to then come in and interview. And so then usually late January, early February, we know who we'll have for the upcoming season.
And what is the age range of applicants?
They have to be 10 by the start of the season, so we round that off to April the 1st. And we will keep them in the program if they want to stay. If they graduate, they can stay the summer after that.
In the past years, the number of youth volunteers has averaged?
The average class size is 25. It's ranged from 20 to 35. The average number of applications ranges from 60 to 113 is our high. So I'd say any given year, it'd be between 25% to maybe 40% getting in.
I wondered, what kind of child is Sarah looking for when she interviews an applicant?
I think it's like when you are interviewing for any job, even for adults, where you have such a range of skill sets, no one's going to tick all those boxes. And so if I can tell that that kid is passionate and focused and maybe they have a special skill, if they're not quite outgoing, but I see the potential, for sure, I'm like, yeah, this is a kid I can work with. Maybe the first year it's going to be a little bit more investment, but then by year two, year three, we know that that kid's going to be thriving. We're definitely going to get a lot of good experiences back for our guests out of that kid.
Sarah explained that many of her youth volunteers put in lots of hours at Conner Prairie that look good on their college applications.
I know that a lot of high schools, colleges are looking for more than just the grades, just the SAT, ACT. They are looking for community engagement and volunteer service.
What are the advantages of being a youth volunteer? I mean, what does it bring to the development of a child from 10 to 18 if they're working as a volunteer here, in your opinion?
That's really the reason why I got involved is because I saw the power of kids connecting with kids and the leadership skills that developed. And so just by the fact that that kid is interpreting or explaining history, leading an activity with sometimes thousands of guests per year, those communication skills, that confidence, I mean, that's even aside of just getting interested in history or a specific skill. A lot of people skills. I mean, for a lot of kids, hey, here's a person that maybe I don't have the same personality as them, but I have to work with them for the day. Those sorts of people skills for them is a great introduction to that.
Clearly, there's a great rapport that the youth find with each other And that also extends to the adult interpreters they work alongside.
A very typical comment is they appreciated the mentorship, and it was like having a bunch of secondary grandparents here.
While in real life you might only have one or two living grandparents, in the Conner Prairie experience, the volunteers might have several parents or grandparents they regularly work with. In addition, they might be people very different from their own grandparents. This year, there's a greater push to make sure that people of all races and ethnicities are represented in the village.
When I did an inventory last time, I think about one out of four of the youth were from some underrepresented group of some sort. But if we're going to tell particularly the history of people of color, the history of slavery, the history of abolition, we have to have those voices to tell that story. I do also want to make it an accessible program economically for anybody. And so we do have a generous grant from Bank of America and from CarMax that helps underwrite the costs of costumes and of travel. And so anyone who's facing a barrier like that, they can at the same time when they go onto the Conner Prairie website, connerprairie.org, they can also look at that. So hopefully that'll help remove those barriers.
One of the most beautiful things I have seen in my own children's experiences is the way in which older surrogate grandparents at Conner Prairie have taken a child under their wings and with great patience have helped them develop their full potential as people, not just interpreters.
We had a kid we called Piney. His real name was Daniel. He's okay with me sharing the story, but they called him Piney because he chattered like a pine squirrel, just nonstop, and just kind of drove the adults a little crazy with his chattering. And so John Rader, who was one of our adult volunteers for years and years, he decided, I'm going to take this kid under wing. And so I have this great picture of he's patiently teaching Piney how to make a haversack, which is like a man purse, is this period textile thing. And he just would, you know, whenever Piney got to be so squirrely, just like, oh, here, come here, I'm going to teach you something. He'd settle him down when it was time. He just took him into the group. And this kid went from being very kind of nervous and kind of high strung to just thriving. And I mean, the last, one of the last highlights I have from him is he was digging up ice cores in Antarctica and just became quite a confident young man.
I love that story because it just speaks to the evolution of what happens here, the growth and the change that can happen. And I saw it in my own children, and I saw it in their relationships with the people around them, and I love to hear these stories because it just supports what we're talking about, the relationships and how they are special.
To end our podcast, our youngest daughter shares her experiences about Conner Prairie with you. She, like Piney, was young and inexperienced. But as adults came alongside her and mentored her, she learned not just practical skills of the 1830s, but even more about love.
When I was 9 years old, I began volunteering at a living history museum where it was 1836 all the time. I wore a tan cotton dress with little red flowers and a blue checkered apron that tied around my waist. I had a white day cap on my head with ruffles, and my hair was hidden underneath, fastened into a tight bun. I played the character of a little girl named Jenny Curtis. She was the daughter of the town blacksmith. The woman who most often played my mother was this wonderfully vibrant woman named Gretchen. She was tall and thin, incredibly hardworking and expressive. I never really knew if she had long or short hair. It was always covered by her bonnet, but I could see that it was turning white. It would curl all around the front of her hairline on a hot, humid day. I'm sure there were many annoying things about having a child assigned to you every day while you were trying to work. Having to explain things to them, being patient with them, letting them experience your job with you. But she never made me feel like a burden. She used to tell me that I was her favorite, the apple of her eye. She would wink at me every time she said it. She taught me how to make biscuits. She would tell me I was absolutely the messiest cook she'd ever met. Somehow flour always ended up everywhere, no matter how careful I was, but she let me do it anyhow. She taught me how to sew. She used to joke that my stitches were some of the biggest, most far apart stitches she'd ever seen, but she let me sew things anyway. She taught me how to knit. I would forget how to cast on just about every day, and she would stop what she was doing and reteach me anytime I asked. She made me feel so special, and she never made me feel like an annoyance. Throughout the day, I would take breaks to go visit with my father in the blacksmith shop. The character of Benjamin Curtis was most often played by a man named Dwight. I loved him. He reminded me of a character from Pirates of the Caribbean. Some of his teeth in the back were metal, and they would shine in the light of the fire, while I watched him carefully form metal rods into nails and hooks and knives. He didn't have a lot of hair, but the hair that he did have was white and sat around his shoulders. He could have been almost scary to any other 9-year-old, but to me, he was wonderful. He would always let me help him in the shop. He would lift me up to the handle on the pump that blew air into the fireplace, and I would use my body weight to pull the lever down like I was ringing a church bell. The fire would roar and roar, and I would jump up and down with glee. One day, he wasted an entire afternoon just making me an S-hook. It had twists and turns in it, and it was all mine. I still have it to this day. I loved his stories. He's the kind of man who could tell you stories till the sun came down and you'd never once get bored. He lived a life of adventure. At least I thought he did. The stories could have been 95% made up and I never would have known. I remember one morning I went out to the well with my pretend mother Gretchen to fill the pitchers of water for the day. It was still a half an hour before the museum opened. The only people around the town were in costume. Everyone was at their wells, retrieving water. I remember the smell of the morning fires coming from the rooftops of each home. The fog was heavy around the village as the sun had barely risen. I could hear wood being chopped, metal being hammered, horses grazing in the fields. I was utterly transported. I felt completely at home here. I was well cared for, nurtured, loved, and adored. I had stepped back in time, and it was beautiful. I had experienced life as Jenny Curtis, and she was a lucky little girl.
As we have talked about surrogate grandparenting over the last two episodes, maybe you might entertain the idea of reaching out and embracing not only your own grandchildren, but those around you who might need the sort of love only a grandparent can bring. If you have any questions about the Connor Prairie youth experience, please reference our show notes or simply go to connorprairie.org. That's C-O-N-N-E-R for more information. Also, if you have a story you'd like to share about that, please contact me at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com. Or call our phone line at 317-572-7876 and leave a message.
Next time on The Grand Life.
I ended up having to create a Microsoft Word document with a list of all the Pokemon cards that I owned and put them in alphabetical order. And that way I was able to keep up with him. If you don't know at least a minimum amount, you're going to look stupid.
That's next time on The Grand Life.
You don't have to be the best grandparent ever, but as I say, I believe that being one is the best thing ever. I'm Emily Morgan, and thanks for joining us here on The Grand Life.
This podcast is written and hosted by Emily Morgan, my grandmother. It is produced and edited by Mike Morgan, my grandfather.
Email them at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com.